Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Today, a very special guest from Sydney. Hi, Chris Brown. How are you?
I'm very well, Greg. Lovely to see you, and it's great to be here with you.
Thank you very much for your time. It's long time that I wanted to discuss on this podcast your incredible book, The Customer Culture Imperative, A Leader's Guide to Driving Superior Performance. And now it's time to have this discussion. I'm super thrilled and super keen to kick off this discussion. As usual, before going into the details of the book, we would like to learn something about you. And therefore, Chris, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, my background actually, career-wise, was with Hewlett-Packard early on. So I started my career at 19 at HP. And that was really, you know, quite formative for me. I mean, HP is really the business that was the original business in Silicon Valley in California. And so, you know, it was a very engineering-driven company, but also a very customer-centric company. So it was really, you know, shaped my view of business substantially. And Bill and Dave Packard were still alive when I sort of joined many years ago. And what I saw in them was, you know, this company that was really dedicated to creating great products, but meeting customer needs really effectively. And also very concerned about employees and creating career paths and a great environment for employees. So it really brought all of those things together that I've then since sort of dedicated my career to is, you know, creating customer-centric cultures in organizations.
And therefore, I'm super keen to ask the next questions. Which values, which core values drive you in your professional career?
You know, so for me, I think one of the core values is how you create value for others. And, you know, my grandmother lived to 100 years of age, and she was very influential on me also. And when I was 4 years old, I remember asking her, you know, why, Grandmère, why are we here? And she said to me, we're here to help others. And, you know, as a four-year-old, I said, well, what's everyone else here for then? So it was kind of a very memorable sort of teaching moment for me as a very young child, but it really stuck with me, you know, this sort of, we're here to create value, to service others. And so that's been a core value of mine is how do we create value for others? How do we serve others? How do we make other people's lives better? And by doing that, effectively making our own lives better as well. So I think that's certainly a core value, you know, and I think the other things that relate to that is how do you do these things consistently and sustainably over time? So, you know, it's easy to say, yes, I'm you know, concerned about this today, but am I consistent in that concern over time? And they're the things that really endure, I think. But yeah, that's probably the essence of it.
Thank you very much for your introductions. Now we know a bit more from our top players today, Chris Brown. Let's go into the game. Let's start a discussion about the Customer Culture Imperative, A Leader's Guide to Driving Superior Performance. First of all, could you please share your definition of customer culture?
Yeah, so a customer culture is really an organization that puts customers at the center of the conversation. So it's a business that's really focused on who are our customers and how do we create value for them and how do we continue to do that better than anyone else? So that's the central driving force of the organization. And that differs a bit from maybe a product-centric focus where we're really focused on building something and that may or may not be delivering value to customers. And over time, sometimes it misses, you know, that. So I think that's a nice contrast, you know, and I think many of us would be aware of Amazon and their, you know, their organization and how they've operated, but they've certainly been a business that I think have executed a customer culture at a really high level, right? They're always starting with customer needs first and then working back and saying, okay, these are the needs customers have. This is the problem that they have. How do we solve that? And they're agnostic to how they solve it. It could be a range of technology, service, solutions, and so on. And so, you know, that's been a philosophy that's worked well for them. And I think it works well for most successful businesses.
I fully agree with you. And I think that's extremely important that this culture, these values are not only written on the top of the door, but it's are really the behaviors and the belief of the people in this company. And in your book, you're defining seven disciplines for a customer culture. We are not going to explain all of them. If somebody wants, he or she should buy the book. It's worth it. Yeah. Or get it out of the shelf and read it again, because I know that a lot of people already have this book. Which of these seven disciplines is, from your point of view, the most challenging for organizations?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that the most obvious one for companies is customer insight. And so that's really about your existing customers and paying attention to their needs and so on. And I think most businesses can always improve in that area. I think part of what we've seen, if I think about all the engagements we've had over many years, the ones that really are challenging for companies is to think more about the future. And so it's more the future disciplines that are related to customer foresight. Where's the market going? How are needs evolving? How are they changing? What tends to happen, and this is natural for all of us, is we get used to doing things the way that we do them and what's working for us. And when things change, it's hard for us to kind of see those changes happening because we like what we're doing. It's working for us. We're in our comfort zone. And those changes are maybe challenging us and they're not in our comfort zone. And it's the same for organizations. So those foresight disciplines are kind of the most challenging ones. So customer foresight and then competitor foresight, which is what new competitors are going to come and change the game and change the way things are done. So they're typically the ones that companies struggle with the most. And more than anything, it's a matter of ensuring that people are having conversations about where the business is going and what trends are happening. I mean, we're seeing a lot of those right now, aren't we, with artificial intelligence is taking over the world in terms of having an impact on all sorts of different elements of a business. And so that's a real factor that's changing the way in which all of us need to do our work, both individually and at a company level. And so that's probably a good example of the companies that are going to be really successful are those that are integrating these new realities, these new powerful tools, and using them for their advantage. So, you know, those future ones are the most challenging for people to use because we get caught up in the existing business. So, yeah.
And an example, I was teaching at a university here in Switzerland, and then I asked to the audience, we spoke about different types of this source of your book, and we were speaking about customer insights. That was understandable. When I asked the questions to them, who are your customers of the futures? Then everybody said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And therefore, yeah. Perhaps you as the expert and helping a lot, and you helped a lot of organizations, how are you helping supporting this organization to think about the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think a lot of this comes down to peripheral vision is one of the disciplines. And peripheral vision is this idea that we're really looking at things that maybe aren't directly in our line of sight, but technologies and social trends and obviously the big political changes that are happening right now in the US, and thinking about how are those things going to impact us and trying to envisage that. So having a conversation around what will these technologies do to change the way in which we do business in the future, and to try and envisage that. So it's really workshopping those types of activities and having a conversation about that. And so what we'll typically do is get a group of leaders together and say, look, this is a significant technology trend that's coming. What are all the implications of that? How are we going to do business differently because of this technology? What are new ways of thinking about that? What are 10 ideas that, you know, we can come up with to change the way in which we do things. So it's really future-orientated thinking and trying to envisage a new future and a new way of doing business. So it's really, you know, that's the best way to do it. And the best way to do it also is collaboratively, because each of us have our own experiences of these new technologies and use them differently and have different lens on that and a different view of it. And so bringing people together with those different perspectives is a really powerful way to do that. I mean, you get better peripheral vision through collaboration. And so what I'd say about all these disciplines, there's these seven disciplines we outline in the book, but they're all interrelated. So the collaboration piece, which is one of those, is super important, right? The ability to talk with different people with different backgrounds, ideas, different frameworks, different maybe formal training, engineers working with HR people, and you get interesting ideas that way.
Thank you. And another really interesting ideas that you are sharing is the market responsiveness index. How can companies leverage the market responsive index to drive customer-centric initiative?
It's a great question. So one of the challenges that we've always found in this area of customer centricity and a customer culture is it's quite fuzzy and vague, and everyone's got a different view of what it is. And so what we wanted to do was create a model, which we call the Market Responsiveness Index, which is a measurement and research framework for an organization to implement in their business. And so you can think of it as an MRI for your business, just like you have an MRI for your body. So it's a similar sort of thing. We're looking inside the organization to understand, you know, how customer-centric are we? Are we doing some of these things? Aren't we? How well are we doing them? And it gives us a really interesting lens on the organization. We get great insight. We get feedback from people across the organization so that we can understand, you know, where we've got pockets of strength. So we've got a group that's really, really customer-centric here in Europe and maybe not so customer-centric here in another country, right? And why is that? Why is it that this group's really, really customer-centric and that one's not? What are they doing that we can bring over here? So it's a way to kind of diagnose an organization and uncover some things that are blind spots for businesses, right? They're things that we wouldn't discover unless we went through the MRI process. And it then becomes a language that a company can use. So if we're talking about being customer-centric, what element are we talking about? Well, we're talking about customer insights. So we're talking about understanding our existing customers better and communicating that across the organization more effectively. So it's a tool that can be used to diagnose, to then create discussions, and then also to drive change, to say, look, we're not that strong in customer insight and we could do better. Now, if we didn't have a tool to measure that, we wouldn't know. You know, we kind of be guessing, yeah, I think we do a bit of this, we do a bit of that. But do the guys in, you know, legal or HR do that? Do they have a customer lens on their work? I don't know. And so it gives us a framework as a leadership group to really have a discussion around being more customer-centric and raising the bar in the organization so that we can adapt more effectively.
Yes, and I think you are sharing also this topic about adapting and thinking about what you already mentioned, the big trends about artificial intelligence or these digital technologies, but also customer expectations evolving. You mentioned at the beginning Amazon. They are setting the expectation for all businesses, or everybody expect from all websites that with one click you can do everything. How can the customer-centric customer culture adapt to all these changes?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a challenge for all organizations, but I guess at the end of the day, you've got to create a priority list around what are the things that are going to meet the customer's needs in the most effective way, certainly in the short, medium, and longer term. So that's one way to sort of prioritize these things and say, you know, what can artificial intelligence do for my customer in the next 3 months? Is there some element of that that could be integrated into how we're delivering value to customers? And then what does it look like beyond that? How can we expand on that? And I think the big trend that's quite different now is that it's forcing organizations to experiment. No one really knows how these tools will evolve, how they'll be used,
we're all experimenting with them to see how they work for our own personal tasks. And then at an organizational level, how are they going to be integrated into how we create value? So we're in a really experimental phase. So the organizations that are willing to do that effectively are the ones that are able to then iterate and then develop the business more effectively. And those that are resistant to it and are really kind of worried about it are going to fall behind. So it's a difficult balance, right? I think there's a need for experimentation. And I think Jim Collins has always got great advice on this, the business book author, sort of shooting. I think his analogy is to do with sort of taking small shots and then, cannonballs once you've actually worked out something that's working, right? And I think it's a good analogy for AI and thinking about how to actually, take some small shots and try to understand what's working, what's not. And then when you find something that's working, really getting behind it and sort of firing sort of big cannonballs is his analogy. So I think that's a good way of thinking about it.
I really like that, exploring, finding new ways to adapt to change. And you mentioned this example, I know from somebody else, our former CEO, he was always a big supporter of accelerate or kill. After a few weeks, few months, you can take your decision. You just say, okay, it makes sense to continue. Let's continue, or let's stop and focus on other stuff. Because we know that a lot of companies are focusing on too many topics, and that's not really helpful. But we are always looking for best practices. And I know that in your book, you're sharing a lot of examples. I don't want to ask for your preferred one, but there are a lot of great examples. And perhaps the one that popped into your mind. Could you please share an example where this customer-focused culture was really successful and brought also to business results?
Yeah, so a company that comes to mind is a company that was operating in the printing industry. So this is a business that sells, photocopiers, large format products. And, for many years, they were a challenger business. So I think in particular, the MRO works really effectively, both with leaders, but also with challengers in the marketplace. And what they'd recognized was that really all of the large copier manufacturers sort of operated in the same way, right? They had the same business model. They had similar products, pretty much commoditized. And so there was sort of a recognition that we've got an opportunity to position ourselves differently and to position ourselves on being a company that actually cares about customers. And so the CEO of this particular business was really interested in building that and making that come to life. And the way he did that was he implemented the MRI initially to get feedback from employees on what they needed to actually deliver better customer experiences. So he wasn't dictating, here's what I want you to do, go and look after customers. He was drawing from employees, the people that are on the front line already doing the work, and engaging them through this MRI process. So he got the data back. And he then prioritized and sort of demonstrated that he heard from employees what were their concerns. And then he put a number of programs in place to help them, enable them to really deliver better customer experiences. And I think the key thing for him was he was a real role model for this as the CEO. So he would spend time with customers himself, talking to them directly. He would be in meetings with customers and he would go and say to them, look, if you've ever got a problem with anything to do with my organization, here's my business card and I want you to call me directly. So he was taking complete ownership and leadership of being a company that cares and a customer-centric company. The result of that was they were fourth in the marketplace when he took over as CEO in terms of market share of the photocopier business. They were able to move to number two in the marketplace. And a lot of the reason for that was that he really took the lead in understanding the customer, understanding that they wanted better service from their copier providers. And he was able to rally the organization in a way that people believed in that. It wasn't just talk and it wasn't a poster on the wall. but he was demonstrating it, role modeling it, showing what was necessary and what he believed that the organization needed to do. And he was listening to employees and empowering them to do the same thing. So it's, you know, they're small gestures that create big impacts, and it shifts the organization's consciousness, right? It shifts people's beliefs around what we're doing and the importance of the work that we're doing. So it moves it from just being profit-centric to being more mission-based as an organization. If you think about organizations, some are just purely profit-based and that's all that they care about, and then others are purely mission-based. And there's somewhere in between that I think is the right mix of those two things. And so he moved them up towards being more engaged around a mission to deliver better experiences to their customers. So that's an example where they've really repositioned a whole organization. And the result of that was that, guess what? Customers wanted to do business with them. You know, that they were delivering, you know, in terms of being a business that demonstrated care, that actually showed up when they said they'd show up, they delivered great service, they did all of those things. And so that was the result.
Chris, thank you for sharing this example. In the book, there are a lot of great examples like the Australian Post, the Virgin Trends, the Starbucks example. And I really suggest to the audience to grab the book and read it. Now we are coming to an end of this discussion, but we still have a few minutes for the extra time. And I have three questions for you. First question, fast forward in 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What we are discussing about?
Look, I think we've already sort of touched on it a little bit, Greg, you know, in terms of talking about AI, but I think that's, we're going to be really talking about how is AI agents and activities actually really enhancing customer experience? How is it really taking it to another level? I think, you know, in the world of customer experience, we've all experienced these, you know, really frustrating interactions with companies where you just want a simple answer and it seems like, you know, really difficult to get that right. You've got to call into a call center and then you've got to wait in a call center queue or whatever. And we've all had those frustrations. And I think a lot of that can be alleviated with some technology, with some, you know, useful technology that will actually enable better experiences. So I'm an optimist when it comes to technology. I think that there's a lot of value that can be created by making it easier to, you know, taking the friction out of those relationships. And, you know, these large companies don't really want to spend the time, and we experience it as consumers, right? They don't want to spend much money on servicing customers in certain ways, but we have frustrations and we want to get things resolved. But I think technology can enable that to be much more effective and more useful. So I think that's a big trend. I think that what's not going away, right, is people, and people have to drive these processes, these systems. They have to direct these AI systems. Even though there'll be sort of more and more autonomy in them, there'll still be humans involved in directing them, in thinking about how can they add value. So that'll never go away. I think just the way in which we're working is going to be enhanced by these technologies. We're going to be superhuman in many ways. But yeah, so I think we'll be talking a lot about that and about how that's really changed how we do our work and where we spend our time. But what won't be different is we'll still be having conversations like this and trying to explore the world together.
Hopefully, we are going to have a discussion like this. And I really like this idea of augmenting, increasing the opportunities for human being for in the positive way. What's the best way to contact you?
So the best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn. You'll see links to our website, to our book, to many resources that we've got. So that's probably the best way.
Thank you. And to the audience, you will find all these links also in the show notes, and you can click there and then get to all these websites. The last question is, Chris, golden nugget, it's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience with?
Yeah, look, I think when people think about a customer-centric culture, often they think, well, that's too big, that's too hard, that's not something I can affect. But like anything, I think what we've found is the most successful leaders in organizations really are very customer-centric leaders. And so if you want to move up in organizations, it's a great platform to move up on. And we've seen people that we've worked with that have been maybe head of marketing or head of customer experience moving up in the organization as a result of really using our methodology to create change in their businesses. So if you're an ambitious leader and you want to really take the organization forward and you want to lead, this is a great tool to create change, positive change in an organization that actually has an impact on the business and in everyone in there. So, you know, I would say don't think of it as something that can't be done, which, you know, we see with some people go, oh, look, this is too big, this is beyond me. Small changes make big impacts. And I often talk about just the fact that you can change an agenda and put the customer on the top of the agenda makes a big difference, right, in terms of the conversations that you have. They're small steps that create significant changes. And they're not difficult things. They don't have to be hard things. They might be new to you in terms of thinking about talking about customers more at meetings and things like that, but they're programs that can be adopted quite easily and create significant changes for the organization.
Thank you very much for this great golden nugget that you are sharing together with us. Chris, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.
Chris, please stay with me to the audience for today. It's everything. We love feedback. Therefore, please feel free to contact me or to contact Chris for any question that you have related to this podcast or related to the book of Chris. I will then forward all the requests to Chris. Thank you very much and have a nice day.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth, subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business, we are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you!